It's so important for leaders at the top of organizations to keep learning, stay sharp, grow their networks. To help our audience better do this in a more simplified, personalized, and meaningful way, Becker's Healthcare has launched MyBHC. It's your trusted Becker's Healthcare experience and more, with content, connections, events, and learning opportunities. Join the community free of charge at www.my.beckershospitalreview.com, and we'll see you there.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by brilliant leader Jacob Emerson. Jacob covers the insurance and payer industry, probably one of the most fascinating industries right now in healthcare for Becker's Healthcare. Talks to us regularly about a few of the issues he's following in healthcare. Jacob, can you take a moment and tell us what are the couple of issues you're following closely in healthcare?
Absolutely. So thanks, Scott. And right now we're following updates on how Medicaid redeterminations are going all over the country. And then some of the most recent data around how payers and employers are approaching coverage of newer weight loss drugs that have really exploded in popularity recently. So we're getting some new data and some new insights about how both of those two issues are kind of developing right now.
And take a moment, because we've talked a decent amount recently on other podcasts about the new weight loss drugs, the Ozempic, Mounjaro, and so forth. These were originally diabetes drugs. We know from an American healthcare standpoint, probably little would help America's healthcare cost more, or American health would improve American health more than all of us losing 5 to 10 pounds. And that's on average, that's not necessarily any specific person. But talk for a moment about the coverage of these drugs. They're diabetes drugs, they've been used off-label for weight loss. Now it's become a thing, surging popularity. They can't even keep up with the demand. Talk about how that gets covered and if it gets covered and what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many different directions to go with this one, but you're right. The demand has surged. They've even started, some of the manufacturers have limited the supply because of how much demand there is. And I'm sure we've all seen the commercials for a lot of these drugs. But you're correct that some are used to treat type 2 diabetes. Others are specifically approved for weight loss. They're all under the category of GLP-1 drugs. That's what they're called. So that's Ozempic, Trulicity, Victoza, Mounjaro. Those are all for type 2 diabetes. And then we've got the weight loss ones that are Wegovy, Saxenda. They're all very similar, if not the same active ingredients. They're just approved for very different things, or I guess for two different conditions. But they're very expensive. Some of these could cost $10,000 annually if they're not being covered by your health plan. And so now the natural question is, who's going to be covering these if they really can live up to the, you know, being able to drop people's weight so drastically, which is obviously a major condition that can impact your health. So we'll see. But as of right now, it doesn't seem like most employers are interested. Most payers are not interested. They've almost entirely constrained coverage of these drugs to diabetes care. That's what most of the major insurers told investors in the first quarter. So they're not covering these for weight loss. You will have to pay out of pocket.
Right, because this would open up a huge, covering it for weight loss would open up a huge amount of cost, because there's so many Americans that suffer from, you know, 5% body weight too much, 10 pounds, 20 pounds too much, and what those lines would be, who gets prescribed for it, whether it's, you know, not just diabetes or obesity, but truly, like, lots of people want to lose 10 to 20 pounds. And so right now, very much, they don't want to cover them. They're very expensive. People are buying them themselves. They can afford it, like cosmetic drugs almost, although it's more than cosmetic. And there's also, you know, you see all these different things on this about whether or not people take the drug for a period of time and then they end up rebounding badly. Any have you read anything about that? Are people talking about that some, or what's the sense of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's certainly a lot of clinical outcomes to these drugs that I think they're still developing. I know we report a new side effect almost every week. And what you said, some patients rebound after they've used the drugs. Some need to stay on it. Others report that it curbs addictions for other things entirely, not just having a propensity towards overeating. So it's really interesting. We've seen things like your the skin on your face can sag. So some really interesting or scary side effects. But in terms of coverage, though, some of the most other data that we've seen from employers, specifically employer-sponsored plans, about 22% of the country or employers say that they will offer coverage for these prescription drugs, and that's for last year. So it might have gone up a little bit since then, but that's one of the largest surveys of this issue to date. So that kind of gives a good indication that payers won't cover it for weight loss. Employers are less than a quarter.
I'm almost surprised that it's that many employers that are starting to cover it, right? But employers have a different perspective than payers. Employers need to keep their employees happy, so they're probably more prone to want to cover this than the payers. But I'm actually shocked at that 22% number. That's a good number growing, I assume.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then for Medicare, weight loss drugs are never covered under current law. And then Bloomberg was reporting just a few weeks ago that 10 state Medicaid programs do offer some broad coverage for these drugs. Now, they didn't specify if that's these newer weight loss drugs, but that'll be interesting to see how the public side of this also develops as well.
Well, and lots of poor people in horrendous dietary situations, high degrees of hypertension and diabetes and so forth. So probably a good thing that Medicaid covers it, but as you mentioned, it's really a work in process to see, and hopefully Medicaid gets better pricing than the $10,000 a year that they're charging for, they're charging generally for this. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely an issue in progress. We're definitely at the start of how this is all going to pan out.
It's likely to be a very big issue given the demand for this and the interest in it. Talk about, you had mentioned one other issue that you wanted to talk about today. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so we're getting some of the first numbers in on how Medicaid redeterminations are going all over the country. And it seems like a lot of health policy experts believe that it's actually going worse than they expected in terms of individuals losing coverage for reasons that doesn't have to do with how much money they make. And so just to recap on kind of what's been going on the last few years policy-wise, the COVID public health emergency essentially created a continuous Medicaid and CHIP enrollment period for the last 3 years. So many people lost their jobs during COVID so they could get on Medicaid, and eligibility requirements based on income weren't checked. But now every state as of April, and it is a staggered process, but every state starting in April, could start in April, basically redetermining, looking at incomes and going through their Medicaid rolls of millions of people and saying, are you eligible? Are you not eligible? So a huge administrative process to sift through. And like I said, some states started in April, about five of them. Another big chunk of states started in May, and it'll kind of stagger throughout the summer. But it's interesting because in Florida, for example, we've seen already 250,000 people have lost Medicaid coverage in the state, but 82% of those people were disenrolled simply because their information wasn't updated with the state, not because they were ineligible based on income. So that's a really big issue. That's what health systems, what payers, what healthcare organizations all over the country have been working on over the last year or two, is trying to get people notified about this.
So when you look at that, the good news is 80% of them are sort of technically losing coverage, but hopefully should be able to get back on coverage if they can get it figured out. And then there's another 20% that truly, but that's important though, that they get that coverage reasserted and reaffirmed. And the other 20% are really losing coverage. Where will some of those people go? Will they get coverage through the ACO or through other ways, or will they just be without coverage?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really dependent on each person. Some people may be eligible for ACA plans and they can sign up there if they meet the income requirements. Others might now be employed over the last 3 years. They might have an employer that offers health benefits. So some people might have both options. And then there will be those people that will just be entirely uninsured. And so that'll be a really key number to watch. I know we're at about 8.4% uninsured rate as of last year. So now we're going to have to see over this next year or two how Medicaid redeterminations essentially throws all of that up in the air. How is that going to really impact our uninsured rate at the end of the day? But that is the goal of everybody, is to get people covered in some other area if they are no longer eligible for Medicaid.
Are you seeing projections? You mentioned 8.4% is the current number. It's down to one of the lowest number in history. Are they expecting that number to, how much are they expecting that number to peak back up? Does it go back to 10, 11%? Is there a sense of what that number goes back to?
Good question, Scott. I'm not too sure of that right now. I know that HHS estimated that 15 million people total across the country will lose Medicaid coverage, but that doesn't account for how many will find coverage elsewhere on ACA, on employer. I think the part of the problem, it's hard to estimate this because you've got 50 different state programs and these people are being shuttled to different kinds of insurance after that. So it's almost like we'll have to wait and see how this develops, how people will be able to find coverage. So I think it's still an open question in terms of how this will impact our uninsured rate at the end of the day.
Thank you very much. And obviously the 15 million would knock up uninsured to 4 to 6% more, which would be a lot. So let's hope one of those get, I mean, that's just the brief math, 330 million divided by 15 million would drive that number up by another 4 to 5%, 15 million being that percentage of 330 million. So that would get you up to 12-14% again, which would be a debacle. But hopefully that's not a real number. Hopefully that number is closer to, goes back up to 10%, whatever the number is. But what a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's just how many people will be disenrolled from Medicaid, not how many people will end up uninsured entirely. That's kind of why it's a wait and see process to how many people get coverage elsewhere.
No, and that's why I say, like, if that total number was 4%, 4 to 5%, that would get you from 8.4 to 13 to 14%. About 13-14%, but if you know half of those get coverage elsewhere, now you're at about 11% or so. But very guess.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be a years-long process to watch. So we'll be on top.
Probably a couple years to really figure out how it sorts out. Jacob, I want to thank you as always for joining us in the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I always learn something. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott.